President Biden visits Texas today, his first official visit to a disaster zone.
Meanwhile, in Washington, the future of the president's $15 federal minimum wage proposal is very much in doubt. It's part of his big coronavirus relief bill that comes up for a vote in the House later today. But last night, the Senate parliamentarian ruled against it. Our Friday Politics Roundtable is here. Beth Fooey, senior politics editor at NBC News and MSNBC. Beth, welcome.
Thank you.
And Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill. Scott, welcome to you.
Hi, guys.
And Scott, start with you. Is that the final word on the $15 minimum wage?
Well, not if you talk to progressive Democrats in the House and the Senate. They are still fighting to get some version of this $15 minimum wage provision in this COVID package. I mean, they are really upset with the Senate parliamentarian for issuing this ruling last night. There's talk, you know, from progressives like AOC and Ilhan Omar of potentially removing her or trying to get the vice president, Kamala Harris, to overturn the ruling. There's also a push from leadership, specifically from the Senate finance chairman, Ron Wyden, who says he wants to impose a 5% tax penalty on large corporations like Walmart if they don't pay a $15 minimum wage. So, you know, there's still some hope that progressives believe that they can get some version of a $15 minimum wage. Nancy Pelosi in the House Democrats today will pass their own package and keep the $15 minimum wage in there. They believe this was a promise that they made to their progressive base and they want to stick to it.
I think it's a surprise to a lot of people that the Senate parliamentarian wields so much power. Politico is reporting that the National Black Women's Roundtable and the Urban League are among the groups asking for a meeting with Vice President Harris to pressure her to overrule the parliamentarian, which she can do as the Senate president, as Scott just mentioned. Beth Fooey, where does the White House stand on this?
Well, where the White House stands is we've got a president, Joe Biden, who spent 36 years in the Senate and we know is extremely respectful of the Senate's sometimes antiquarian ways, and respecting the will of the Senate parliamentarian is very much in keeping with the Biden approach to all things in the Senate. The White House said last night that they were disappointed with the decision, that they were going to look for other ways to push forward with a $15 minimum wage, but it's unlikely that they would ever take any step quite so draconian as to fire the parliamentarian. The other thing, of course, that this is going to lift focus on is the question of the filibuster. Progressives are very much using this as an example of why the filibuster needs to be gotten rid of in the Senate. Of course, that is the rule that 60 votes need to be assembled for any major provision to move through. Joe Biden has also said he doesn't support that. He does not support removing the filibuster. So we're seeing very much in keeping with Joe Biden all along. He is respecting the traditions and the mores of the Senate, perhaps at the consternation of some of his more progressive backers.
Scott Wong, let's move on to another story. Last night, the Biden administration authorized its first military strike in Syria. This was against Iranian-backed militias that are operating or launching attacks into Iraq. Help us understand the significance of this and what it signals to you.
Well, that's right. I mean, this is, you know, President Biden from the outset has talked about diplomacy, that he wanted to sort of hit the reset button on diplomacy. But at the same time, you know, in the past 2 weeks, we've seen attacks by militia groups, Iranian-backed militia groups that killed a civilian contractor, that injured several Americans. So this was what is being seen as a retaliatory strike against some of those Iranian-backed militia groups in Syria. Most Democrats, the reaction on Capitol Hill, most Democrats are standing with President Biden. They're giving him the benefit of the doubt. However, there are some progressives like Ro Khanna of California, Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, who are questioning Biden's constitutional authority. Biden did not come to Congress first. He did not seek an AUMF, an authorization for the use of military force. And so progressives are looking at this a little bit critically, although I would say by and large, Democrats are giving the president the benefit of the doubt.
Beth, what do you make of the politics of this? Because, you know, Scott just talked about the Democrats. On the Republican side, we're seeing Texas Republican Michael McCaul praised Biden's actions, said they were necessary for protecting Americans overseas. Do you think that there could be any long-term political repercussions here for the president?
Well, I think the real political message here is that Joe Biden is saying that he intends to be tough on Iran when necessary, even as his government, his Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, is moving forward with signaling that they want to restart talks around Iran's nuclear program. Of course, that was something that President Trump dropped the United States out of was the nuclear agreement with Iran. This White House is signaling it wants to move forward and figuring out a way to restart that agreement. But Biden is also saying, even though that is a priority for him, he is not going to sit back and not engage militarily, and to show Iran he intends to be tough no matter what the diplomatic side of the administration is doing. Mm.
Let's turn now to the first congressional hearings held this week on the January 6th insurrection and the security failings at the Capitol building. Yesterday, we learned from Acting Chief of Capitol Police Yogananda Pittman that extremists are still targeting the building.
We know that members of the militia groups that were present on January 6th have stated their desires that they want to blow up the Capitol and kill as many members as possible. With a direct nexus to the State of the Union, which we know that date has not been identified.
Scott, what struck you in the testimony that you heard this week?
Well, exactly that, that there is still an ongoing threat, according to the acting police chief of the Capitol, that there is a specific target, which is when Joe Biden will address a joint session of a Congress. It's not the State of the Union, but it's his first major address to Congress. We don't yet have a date, so this is a general threat, but it's that specific event of the president coming to Capitol Hill. And what you're seeing is just an enormous amount of distrust, even 7 weeks after the January 6th attack, among Democrats and Republicans. In the wake of these riots, it's really permeating every facet of Capitol Hill, just everyday business. There's, verbal fights breaking out in committee meetings, in hallways, just an extreme amount of partisanship in the wake of these attacks. And there's reminders of January 6th everywhere you look. I mean, There's still 7-foot fencing around the entire Capitol complex and hundreds of National Guardsmen positioned at every corner of the Capitol.
Well, 2 weeks ago, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell pinned the blame for the January 6th riots squarely on President Trump. Here he is.
There's no question, none, that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day.
But last night, Fox News host Brett Baer asked McConnell this question regarding Trump and a potential run in 2024.
If the president was the party's nominee, would you support him?
The nominee of the party? Absolutely.
A little bit of whiplash there, Beth. What is this signal to Republican voters?
Boy, it is whiplash, isn't it? I mean, I think one has to just look at the events taking place today at CPAC, the conservative gathering that happens every year for Republicans, and more recently, something that's turned primarily into an adulation of President Trump personally. It's no longer even suggested that it's anything other than that. So that's where Mitch McConnell realizes the energy the party still is. They're down there in Orlando now, talking about holding panels on President Trump's claim that the election was stolen from him and that was rigged, all completely debunked and debased, but of course was the fuel that lit the fire that sent those rioters into the Capitol. So Mitch McConnell is walking a very delicate dance. He does not have a whole lot of Republicans with him and willing to condemn the president for provoking the riot. He has been sort of shamed by many in conservative media. And so he's taking the safe route. out and simply saying he will support the nominee of the party in 2024, probably personally hoping that it is not Trump, but he is simply saying that he will support whoever's the Republican candidate.
Scott, we have a minute here. I need you to weigh in on this, too. I don't understand. I still do not understand how McConnell can say Trump is morally responsible for the insurrection and then say he'd support him if he were the nominee. What do you think?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, the entire party is still wrestling with this. And McConnell knows that, you know, they still need Trump voters to turn out at the elections. And in 2022, Trump is a major draw. He's still enormously popular. And so they need Trump voters to turn out and help them push them over the top in their quest to win back the Senate and the House.
Wow. Politics. All right. Indeed. Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill, and Beth Fooey, senior politics editor at NBC News and MSNBC. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.